All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hello and welcome to the Real Sober Mom Chats on the Sober Mom Life podcast. You guys know these stories are near and dear to my heart. These are stories from women who are in the Sober Mom Life community, in the Sober Mom Life Cafe. And for a lot of them, it's the first time telling their story. These are real moms. It's like the Real Housewives, but without the booze. Don't forget, if you want to share your story, come and join us. We now have 2 options for memberships. We have the Sober Mom Life community. For $5.95 a month, you get to connect with sober and sober curious women all day long in the chat and in the feed. And then you also get access to our Tuesday peer support Zoom meeting at 11 a.m. Central. And also the cafe. The cafe is $25 a month, and you get so many meetings. You get access to 8 weekly peer support meetings, plus our monthly book club. You get your own feed and chat where you get to connect with the ladies. You also get to go on things like the retreat with us that's coming up at the end of February, and just so many other amazing things. Come and join us. We would love to have you, and enjoy the Real Sober Moms. Welcome. Welcome back, even though you guys have not heard from Amy before, but Amy and I have tried to do this. Is this number 3?
Yeah, third time's a charm.
Okay, third time's a charm for Amy to be on the Real Sober Mom Chats. Oh, well, thank you for doing this.
No, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, we have to go back. Let's talk about alcohol, that crazy bitch.
So I feel like my journey with alcohol, it was like a delayed start. I didn't really drink at all until, mid-20s. Like, I was married, so like I never did the high school parties. I didn't do much of the college party thing either.
Wait, where do you live? Where in the world are you?
In the Midwest. I'm in St. Louis.
So rare though, right?
I guess. I don't know. I went to school at Truman State, and so it was like one extreme or the other there. It was like either you were a big giant nerd, that was me, or you had to make your own fun because we were in Kirksville and there was nothing else to do. So,
okay.
I mean, I went to some parties, but I think some of it came from I really didn't like not being in control of my body. And so I think there was part of me that was like, oh, I can't do that, because I was already pretty like socially anxious. And I was like, well, I mean, then I might look like a fool and I don't want to do that. So I think I just stayed away.
That means your brain was like working and like you had a survival instinct that I definitely did not have, because I also wanted to be in control of my body and was socially anxious. But I was like, oh, cool. Okay. Yep. Keep it coming.
This makes me feel better. Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Alcohol. Great. Then I just don't care.
When we got married, it was like, you know, we were looking for stuff to do. Like, we didn't have kids yet. So we would like go on a date or like do that kind of stuff. And we were like, we don't know anything about anything. And so we would do like a wine tasting, like for fun and like learn stuff. And so we thought we were fancy, I think. And then I really didn't drink a ton until after I had kids. It was really just a social thing. And I also think partially because we were really, I mean, we were poor and newly married. Like, we got married at 21.
Yeah, babies. Yeah.
We were babies. So, you know, we pretended to be fancy for a while, and then we had kids. And then I think it was probably just a combination of things piling one on top of the other. If I look back now, it seems like times where I didn't love my life circumstance, those were the times where I would drink more.
Mm.
And it was like, obviously you have phases like that in your life and they start to ramp up more and more and more. So I think the first time might have been, you know, having a new baby and figuring that out and like, okay, this is like something that we do on Friday nights once she's finally asleep.
If that ever happens.
Yeah. She didn't sleep through the night till she was almost a year and a half.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
That's how all my babies were too. Like, I never had good sleepers, and people who have good sleepers don't understand, because that is a certain type of hell when you're just so sleep deprived and like, and it's not up to you. Like, that is what still, like, I hate that it's like, I can't just go to bed when I'm tired and I can't just sleep when I'm tired. Like, there's this outside force making me get up.
And it's like guilt associated with it too. Cause you're like, what, I'm not supposed to feel like this. I'm not supposed to want them to, you know, and you're like, no, but this is real.
Right. And it's like, they just want me. Like, they don't want anything else. They don't want my husband. They don't, like, that's what they want, is they want me, but I want sleep.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think we got into these spaces where I started to not be happy at work. So I worked for Starbucks for a long time, and that's not a job you can do in 40 hours.
What did you do for Starbucks?
I managed stores. So I started in Kansas City and then moved back here. And so, I mean, I ran a $3 million a year store here, and like, I thrive in that environment, like the crazy fast paced, like keep it moving. And so it was a blast, but then eventually it was like, someone has to sleep sometime in this house. So I ended up like demoting myself and kind of moving more into like a new store openings, like organizational management, like drawing spaghetti maps and making things flow better kind of space. And so that was fun for a while, but my whole life has been like health and fitness, really. When I was growing up, I was a competitive gymnast turned softball player and swimmer. So then when I got to college, I found like marathons, and I worked at our rec center and I taught group classes. I was a health science major. So like all of that was like spinning in my brain. And in college, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. So, you know, if I think about, I might've gotten into drinking in my latter years of college, except for I was busy learning how to eat all over again. And so, you know, having an autoimmune inflammatory bowel disease situation was like, okay, this is a lot going on. So I got to this place at Starbucks where I was so frustrated, and I tried to quit like 3 times before they actually let me. And I like, I hated it. So I was like drinking at work. Like, I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I hate this. And so it was like this escape.
And what do you mean drinking at work? Like, you like hiding it in your...
Like, we would... No, I mean, I was not the only one, but it would be like a, hey, on your lunch break, run over to Schnucks kind of thing. And like, then as soon as we were done, it was like, we would all just hang out in the parking lot. And like, there was like a bar around the corner. And so we would do some of that, but it was like, I was like, I have to be above board because I'm running this place. But like, I'm sure they weren't. And so the rule follower in me came out for the most part. But I ended up leaving that. I went back to school and became a dietitian. I had always wanted to do that and just kept, I think, telling myself like, oh, it's going to be too much work. It's going to be too much work. But I kind of couldn't stop thinking about it. So now I'm a dietitian and a CrossFit coach. So we're still health and fitness. And then I was working at a hospital here in town. So I was working at the biggest hospital in St. Louis as a clinical dietitian. And at first I loved it. And again, as we got towards, I don't know if I love this anymore, it was also COVID. And that combination was a mess for me. You know, it was when we were so scared. I was coming home from work and like leaving my clothes in the garage and like coming in and showering and like immediately pouring a glass of wine, because how else do we come down from this crazy? Like, it was a mess. And so I didn't think too much of it. There was too much else to think about, I guess. You know, it's like everyone else is staying home. I still have to go to work. How do we know if we're safe?
Right. How do I keep my family safe like that? Especially when you're going into the hospital setting. Like, I was afraid of that, but I wasn't anywhere. I could just hole up, right? And so, yeah, this idea of like, how do I keep my family safe and safe from what, which we didn't even know. And yeah. Oof.
Yeah. It was a lot of unknown. And, you know, I've always had like, I think I've always known myself to be like a worrier and overthinker, but I don't think I ever labeled it as like kind of a high functioning anxiety situation until I like really started to think about what was going on. So somewhere in there, I was coaching CrossFit and I decided like, I'm going to do a dry December.
You were like, I'm not waiting for January.
No, it was weird. I had just read Holly Whitaker's book.
Yeah. Quit Like a Woman.
Because again, like so much of my life is in this health space, but then I'm over here drinking all the time. And it was like I knew it didn't add up, I think, in my head, but I didn't have a better option in my mind. I had already read This Naked Mind, like when I was in my dietetic internship. And so I had kind of done my own alcohol experiment. I knew enough about my drinking to know like this could be problematic, but then I just kept going back to it.
Right.
And so I just feel like my oscillation to like drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking. I feel like people talk about like, oh, I did this for years. And I'm like, yeah, to think about like a 6 or 7 year journey of that. Cause that's really what I did.
Well, and really you could do that your whole life, right? And I think a lot of women do that their whole lives, not knowing that they can stop, not knowing that they qualify for stopping.
And I think that was it. And I also, I mean, the clarity of mind I've had in the last couple of months is just bananas. But
yeah,
As I think back on it, I'm like, I'm a dietitian. If I told you like, no, I don't drink, that would check. That story checks. And the fact that I was like, that's the one thing I tell people not to do that I can't do. Like, I can't not drink. I think it kept me from admitting how hard it was. And it kept me from like finding my people, you know? And I went through the whole like, I mean, I've been in therapy a lot. And there's always that question of like, well, do you drink? And I'm like, well, yeah, like everybody else though. So it's fine. Nothing to see, like keep it moving. And I, you know, and so I just was like, oh gosh, like I am going to have to do this on my own. And so this summer, we went on vacation and I tried to not drink and probably did better than I have on other vacations, but was just like, huh, that was harder than I wanted it to be. And so as we came back home, I was like, okay, well, I have a CrossFit competition coming up, so that will keep me from drinking for a little while. And it kind of didn't. And then I was having like major surgery in August, kind of after that competition. And I was like, well, that's going to be a total reset. I'll be fine. And 2 weeks after that surgery, I was right back where I was like, I can drink an entire bottle of wine in an evening and no one's checking on me. Like no one's noticing, not because I was like hiding it, but like, I'm the one that's home all the time. I'm the one that's taking the trash out. Like nobody was noticing.
No one's like looking over your shoulder to see how much you're drinking. Yeah.
And so after like a week or two of that post-surgery, I was like, okay, this is some kind of personal hell. Like, what am I doing? I was driving to the grocery store to get a bottle of wine that I was like, I don't even really want that, but this is just what I do. And I was like, I can't keep doing it. And having had this conversation with my husband like 2 years prior, I was like, I can't ask him to help me without helping myself this time somewhat. And so that was like the next day I got on and like joined the cafe. And because I'd been listening to you for forever and I was like, I have to do it on my own before I tell him. And so I had like a week of like coming to a meeting or two and like chatting with the other women and being like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone this time. Like this can stick. Okay. And so that was September. And then of course, like we immediately jumped into, it was my birthday in October. It was our anniversary. It was Thanksgiving. It was Christmas. It was, you know, all of it. And it was okay. It was all right. And we actually just went on our first sober vacation. We just got back from Mexico last week and
yay.
It was awesome. Like it was so great. And there was maybe once or twice where I was like, huh, I think that would have been nice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But I've tried that before and I know what that feels like. And so every time I just told myself like, let's see what it's like if you don't, which was great. And I was like, I knew I had all the ladies to lean on if I needed them, but man, to like wake up clear headed and get to go walk on the beach and not worry about it.
Oh, it's the best.
Priceless.
Right? I mean, it's like how vacation should feel. Really?
Our vacation, I think it felt longer. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, totally. Yes. Time evaporates when you're drinking, right? Not only do you like forget about things, you kind of, if it's a brownout even or whatever, you lose time. And so what you're gaining in sobriety is a lot of time. That can be scary because you could be like, holy shit, what am I going to do with all this time? But on vacation, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and there were moments looking back where like, I think maybe even just once or twice. I think I've always been so worried about what everyone else's perception of me is. Like that's probably the only thing that kept me from being a person who blacks out. But there were once or twice where we were on a girls' weekend and someone was like, you probably don't remember anything about last night, do you? And I was like, oh, okay, I can't do that again. Okay. Like, and so I had a couple of those moments, I'm sure, along the way. But like from September until now, it's pretty insane the amount of things that have happened. Like I'm just thinking about what would have happened in 4 months if I was drinking versus what happened not drinking. So I, since working at the hospital, had, you know, started working for some friends, actually doing kind of stuff basically on my own, like telehealth.
Yeah.
And I ended up like leaving them, starting my own business, going off on my own, which I don't think I ever would have made that decision or jumped off on my own and like been brave enough to like become Amy Dempsey Nutrition all by myself with, if I was still drinking. There's no way. No way.
Yes, because there's a trust that you have, right? You trust yourself.
Yes. And I've said this on calls before. It's like before you always had something to blame. Like I had a bad workout. It's like, oh, well, it's because I drank yesterday. Or like, you know, you forgot something and it's like you had something to blame. But like, if you take alcohol out of the equation, you get to take credit for things too.
Totally. Yeah.
So like the opposite is true, right? And so I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. You're like, I'm doing this. I did this. Like, this is me. And also like quitting drinking alcohol, I think that I never want to forget this. In a society that's obsessed with alcohol, it's fucking hard to quit drinking alcohol before you're forced to, right? I mean, it's hard when you're forced to.
Right.
But I think it might be even harder before you're forced to. And it takes that like continual checking in with yourself. I'm like, no, 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 this, I know that this is good for me. This is what I want to be doing. It's a constant checking in with yourself and accounting on yourself and relying on yourself. And that is like a muscle that you're strengthening, right? And then you get to see that in other areas of your life, like starting a business. Like it's no, yeah, that's not a coincidence that happened.
No. And like to have to completely start over and rebuild a website and rebuild on Instagram has been, I mean, it's been hard. There's been hard days and lots of tears and all of that.
Yeah. Good. Yes. Feel the tears. Cry the tears. I love tears.
But like, I'm, you know, feeling all the feelings is okay. It's caused like a whole new level of like introspection, I think. And, you know, I am a firm believer of like therapy for all, like we should all
totally
go.
Yes.
But yeah, I do think like there's no way that the last 4 months, like the productivity is insane. insane. And so I do think about the amount of like hours of evening time that I lost with my people. Cause I was like, I was here, but not here, you know, it's just crazy. And so I just am so grateful, but I think you're right. Like quitting before you are forced to is hard. And you absolutely, I mean, you say this all the time. It's like, you've got to go through that like purgatory of like on again, off again, on again, off again, because otherwise you don't appreciate, I don't think, what it feels like to not, and you don't have enough examples of what it felt like, oh, I went back to it. I didn't feel good. Okay. Like, it's like, you have to have those data points for sure.
Yeah. It's like a slow learning, right? And it's like change. It's like change that happens a little bit at a time. And then all at once when you're like, oh, like now you're in the all at once part. But you even said you listened to like, or you read Quit Like a Woman years ago, and you were listening to the podcast while you were still drinking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. 100%.
Yes. I think that's so important. And that's why the community and the membership and the Facebook group, and I welcome people who are still drinking and to come. And if you are still drinking, come to meetings. And because it's all just this like slow building blocks and planting those seeds that it makes a difference. And that's why there's also like not a day one, right? There's just, you're bringing it all with you.
And like, I could look it up, right? Like I have an app, but it's just, it's kind of for fun. Like if somebody asks me, you know what I mean? Like, I know it was in September.
Yeah. I'm always like, I don't know how many days. Yeah. Yeah.
And it is interesting too. Like, I think I haven't been super public with my story because of my line of work, but I think it's getting to that point where it's sort of time in some ways. And I've never like have hid it from anyone. Like I've been pretty open about like, oh, I'm not drinking. But the amount of people that come out of the word work to like talk to you when you say things like that is so awesome. Like have had some of the greatest conversations with people about their why, like why they stopped drinking or any of those things. And it's given me so much more empathy, I think, for all of my clients. Like, just, it may not be alcohol for them, but stuff that's hard is just hard. And you have to like try and fail and try and fail. It doesn't matter what it is. It's going to the gym. It could be drinking water. It could be like eating, maybe you don't love vegetables. I don't know what it is, but like, it's given me a lot more compassion, I think, for how hard it is to do something new, because this is new and everyone else, it feels like, is doing it and doing it better or easier than it is for you. And that is hard. It's really hard.
It is hard. And yeah, you can beat yourself up easily, right? And be like, God, I should be better at this, or I shouldn't feel like this, or this should be easier, right? I think that that's probably one of the biggest shifts in sobriety is how do you meet yourself with compassion and where you are. And, you know, I always say to see alcohol as a villain and yourself as the hero, because we've let alcohol be the hero for so long, and that was just a lie. And so what if you were the hero? And like, how would that feel?
That was, I think, one of the key pieces for me was like, the people who are making it look like they can moderate or like have a normal relationship with alcohol, like
in quotes, you guys, she did really big air quotes.
I'm really big air quotes on that. Yeah. Like, it seems normal, but it's not. Just because it's common doesn't mean it should be normal. You know, it's like we say that about a lot of things in healthcare. And I just think this falls in that category of like, it's really easy to feel like it's a should, you know, that alcohol is a should. And when you start to see it as something that is, I mean, it's just an addictive substance. Of course it's hard. And so that shift for me was helpful, because I just think so much of my life, I'm like, well, I'm just strong enough to figure it out. Like, that like sink or swim mentality. I'm going to swim. I'm going to figure it out. Cause I mean, that was the house I grew up in. It's just like, if you don't know, figure it out. And so I was like, well, okay, but I do need community, I think, to figure this one out. And that was just so helpful for me. And, you know, I think we're coming up on a space where I do feel comfortable sharing more, like, even if it's not the whole story. I mean, obviously I'm doing this, so like, I'm comfortable sharing because I think it could help someone, but like, even just to like, hey, I haven't had a drink in X amount, and here's like all the things I've noticed. Because if we're not talking about the positives, nobody's going to want to, like, you know, it's like we have to talk about all the great stuff that's happened since giving it up.
especially in the healthcare industry, right? Like, we need as many voices talking about it as possible to say, like, hey, no, did you know that this was an option? Like, did you just know it was even on the table that you could just actually stop without declaring yourself powerless? And like, here are all the benefits you're going to notice. Yeah, that I think is huge.
And I think if you're in healthcare, people assume that you're healthy, which is like not always the case. But like, I do think because of that, I mean, it took me a long time to be like, no, this was a struggle for me and it's been hard. And here's how I did it. Like, if that can help somebody else, like, I'll set my ego aside for that all day because it's not easy. And there's a lot of the CrossFit space that there's a lot of alcohol involved in. There's a lot of the healthcare space. There's a lot, you know. And so, like, I don't have a family that I was like kind of fighting this, like, there's alcohol everywhere. But man, if I did, it would have been even harder for me. You know, it's like I already felt like I had these other two things that I was up against just from a perception thing. I was like, I didn't want to admit that it was hard. And so it wasn't like a powerless thing for me. It was like, but it is an addictive substance. So no, it wasn't easy, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that makes so much sense. And the idea that what always rubbed me the wrong way is the whole, like, you're powerless, even though alcohol is not in your life, you're still powerless to it. And I'm like, well, I took my power back. Like, I have all of the power. Alcohol, because it's no longer welcome or invited into my life, is now powerless to me. Mm-hmm. Like, it does not have power over me, right? And so that's what I always rubbed up against with the whole like powerless forever thing. And maybe it's just wording and like, but I think wording and how we talk about things is really important, especially for women who like, we don't need to feel more powerless. Like, and that's what Quit Like a Woman got to as well, right? Like, we need to take our power back.
Yeah. I think that was a hard part for me. I have spent a good bit of time like in the recovery space, just even in like my first degree, like doing, I mean, also I went to school at Kirksville, so Narcotics Anonymous was all the rage up there, but we had to like go to meetings just to like see what they were like in some of my courses. Like, I still remember that. And then my uncle, who is the best man you're ever going to meet, has been sober now for 30 plus years and like AA saved his life. So there's a space for that. And I've seen aspects of it and parts of it like work for so many people. And there's still parts of it where I'm like, yeah, like I appreciate a lot of it, but the powerless thing, I think for so many females is so hard to swallow because you're right. We don't need to feel less powerful.
Right. Right. And it just, for me, it felt like a sentence. It felt like the focus would be on alcohol my whole life when I wasn't living day to day with my focus on alcohol. Like, I wasn't, you know, actively addicted to it, drinking it all day, every day. Like, that just, I wasn't focused on alcohol every day. And so the idea that I would be focused on it every day in sobriety or when I wasn't drinking it, I mean, it not only kept me drinking, it scared the shit out of me. Like, I was like, holy shit. So if my option is to continue drinking like how I drank and just like not love my relationship with alcohol or not drink it but still be forever tied to it, like, those are two really bad options for me.
Yeah. And for me, I did feel like it was an everyday thing. And so I was like, if this is already an everyday thing and then I'm going to be tied to admitting that I'm powerless to it every single day, that would have been hard.
Even when you're not going to drink it.
Right. I was like, but I'm trying to not think about it. And so this is going to make me think about it more. So many people struggle with the forever thing. And I did too at the beginning. And so that's the other thing is that if we're admitting this powerlessness, it feels like a life sentence. And so if you're having trouble with saying, I'm not going to drink anymore forever and ever, amen, then obviously that's going to be hard too. And so, yeah, I mean, when I stopped, I was like, I just know I can't keep doing this. And that was enough. It wasn't like, this is forever. It wasn't a whatever, you know. And there's been like one or two times where like we've hosted something here, a family event where there was alcohol. And like with my husband there, I was like, let me just take a sip and see. And I've just like made a face every time.
Yes. Yeah. Because it tastes like ethanol, right? Like the farther away you get from it, it tastes, you guys, alcohol is gross.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you.
Yeah. You know, it's not like I drank enough in those moments to feel it, but I like remembered like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's weird. It makes your body feel weird. And I was like, how did I get to a point where I enjoyed this? Cause this feels terrible. Mm. So anyway, I think I've had enough data points. Like two was enough for me. I was like, nope, this is fine. And so, cause I was worried that on vacation it would feel that way. Like, oh, I just need to try it and just be sure. And it was interesting at one point, like, you know, we got to know so many of the people bringing drinks. They were like, club soda and a lime, right? I'm like, yes, that's me.
Keep them coming. I'm not driving.
Right. So
that's always like my dad joke every time, literally at every restaurant. They're like, would you like another bottle of Pellegrino? And I'm like, oh, what the hell? I'm not driving. And then they laugh every time. I'm like, you guys, yeah. It's the worst dad joke.
It's the worst joke, but it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like at one point I was like nervous that like the virgin mojito I ordered like actually had liquor in it. And I was like, okay, but what if it does? I don't want it. It's not like a conscious choice. And so like, I don't actually, like I'm not having this conversation. It's fine. Like, but it was just one of those things where it was a total shift in my brain to be like, I don't care. And so, you know, it was just like one of those, like, I can leave this sitting here if I want to and not worry about it. Anyway, just freed up so much brain space and, you know, just in every aspect, like my relationship with my girls is 1,000 times better. My relationship with my husband, and he's still drinking, but he said too, he's like, it does make me like really think through the times that I do drink because it's not something we're doing together. And I love his response. Like, I have only asked him a handful of times because my whole point in doing all this was like, I need you to support me, but I don't need you to hold me accountable because there's a big difference.
That's a good discussion to have.
Spousal support is great, but spousal accountability gets a little dicey. And so,
totally.
You know, just being able to tell him like while we're in Mexico, like it'll be 4 months of no alcohol. And he's like, that's awesome. And so like, man, I've never eaten so much dessert in one night, you know, but it was fine.
Yes.
And
yes,
but he just has said like, it has made him question, but he said it's been positive, you know, cause my question was always like, do you feel like our connection is better, worse, the same? Like, you know, he's like, sometimes I feel badly, you know, drinking a beer on a Friday if you're not, which I never drank beer. So I was like, you can drink all the beer you want because I can't drink it. But like it's a conscious choice for him instead of it's a Friday. And so
instead of a habitual. Yeah.
So we'll see. I just think I don't expect anyone else to make the same decision. Right. And I think so many of us say that, but I think that's important to say.
Yeah, I think so too. And even just that, right? Just opening up the conversation. Like my husband and I do the same and he still drinks. And it's just now we are talking about this thing, right? Whereas before when we were both drinking, we probably weren't going to talk about it. We would do it and then there would be shame or, you know, all of this unsaid stuff. But now you're talking about it with your husband and he's then in turn can't help but consider his relationship with alcohol, right? And that's where it all starts. And just to be able to talk about it.
And to feel like the shame is like lifted. Like I don't think he ever was shaming me, but like, man, those middle of the night wake ups of like, oh God, I did it again. Like was so terrible. And for me, it was like, when I think about having started this business, like I never would have done that because the negative self-talk was so loud while I was drinking, just so loud. And it would be in everything. It was like walking into a room of people I didn't know. It was like walking up to a certain weight on the barbell and telling myself I can't lift this. It was everything. I was like, man, like I keep telling myself I'm the worst. So like it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy. And it was like, man, so without the alcohol, that voice is, it's still there sometimes, but it's way quieter.
Yes. Oh my God. Amy, I'm so proud of you.
Thanks.
Yes. Think about what you've done in 4 months. Like, and it's just going to continue. That's the cool thing. It's like, this isn't, at least for me, like over 4 years in, it hasn't like dissolved, right? It's not like, ugh, the joy, the gratitude. I haven't taken it for granted. And you continue, it just like propels you into creating and to doing all the shit that you were probably meant to do in the first place. And alcohol just came in and ruined it.
I mean, I think we say this a lot. And like you talk about like the first couple weeks being like the first mile of a run. And I remember feeling like that, like, oh my gosh, I am just going to think about this all day, every day. I'm going to be like online talking to these women just so I can stay sober forever. And I don't know exactly when that shift happened for me, but I remember feeling like, oh, I need to like check in and see like what's going, you know, as opposed to, oh my gosh, I need to check in. I feel like I'm losing my mind, you know, and it's like a slow fade, but it just feels like this is my life now. It's not like this project that I'm like working on or like in the middle of quite the same. And so anyway, it just is worth getting through that first couple of weeks, month, because if I think about redoing that, I'm like, oh no.
Exactly. And sometimes that's what you'll fall back on so that you don't go back to that. Right. And it's so much easier to keep going than it is to start again. Like, it's just so much easier to keep going.
And I remember like listening to people say that on the podcast when I was first starting, being like, that they say that, but I just don't know. You know, I would be like, I don't know if they know what they're saying, but like being on the other side, like it's true. It really is. But man, those first couple of weeks were really hard. Like, I refuse to sugarcoat it for people, but 100% worth it. But like, yes, it's difficult because it's alcohol. Like, it's not difficult because it's you. It's difficult because it's alcohol.
Yes. Amen. That's right. Oh my God. Amy, I'm so glad we finally did this. Third time was the charm. We got
absolutely.
It. We did it. Thank you. You're so inspiring, and I'm just so damn proud of you. And I can't wait to see what else you do because, man, you're on a roll.
Yeah, hope so. I hope the snowball keeps going in the right direction. So
it will. It will. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober podcast wherever you get your podcasts.